88.3 Southern FM.
Now the Space Show turns its attention to some Australian satellite anniversaries. But first up, a little bit of a mystery. Melbourne University has built a satellite. And yes, I've seen it myself with my own eyes. It does exist. And there were reports that it had been shipped off first to the Netherlands and then on to Vandenberg Space Force Base in California to be launched on a SpaceX mission called Transporter 9. Unfortunately, it didn't go on that rocket, and we don't know why. There's just nothing from Melbourne University about it, and the launch provider, their most recent news post was dated October the 25th last year. That's a company called ISI Launch. And they were supposed to package up this satellite called Spirit and send it off to America to be launched by SpaceX. And a satellite tracking website says the launch date is now November the 30th. And it has given Spirit, this is Melbourne satellite, the a temporary NORAD number of 99,011, so 99011. But Melbourne University, they're not saying anything, and I've been in contact with them, and the best I could got out of them was it's going to be launched in the next month, which means December. So maybe it's going up on some other vehicle, we just don't know. There is a launch supposed to go on December the 1st, a Falcon 9 from Vandenberg. It carries a Korean and an Irish satellite, and it may be that the Australian satellite is being piggybacked aboard that. So the mystery will no doubt resolve itself eventually, but the folks at Melbourne aren't saying anything. Oh, they reckon they're too busy to talk to the space show. Anyway, it was 55 years ago tomorrow that the European Launch Development Organisation launched the Aldo 1F7 from Woomera in South Australia. That was a European rocket. Now, 5 years ago, on November the 11th, an Electron rocket was launched from New Zealand to orbit two Australian satellites. They were called Proxima 1 and Proxima 2 for the Fleet Space Technologies Company of Adelaide. Also 5 years ago, on 2018, November the 29th, an Indian Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle rocket launched the Centauri 1 satellite for the same Adelaide company, Fleet Space Technologies Proprietary Limited. Several days later, on 2018, December the 3rd, a SpaceX Falcon 9 launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base, as it was then known, and placed a clutch of three Australian satellites into orbit. They were Sirion's Helios Wire Pathfinder, the Royal Australian Air Force's M1, and Fleet's Centauri 2. But the big ticket anniversary this week is the launch of Australia's first launch satellite called ReSat. That was launched from Woomera 56 years ago today. And here is a documentary produced at the time about that launch.
On the 29th of November 1967, Australia joined the Space Club of Nations by successfully launching from its own soil an Earth satellite of its own making. The project, which evolved from a program of upper atmosphere research that has continued over many years, was a joint effort of the Weapons Research Establishment and University of Adelaide. Design and manufacture of the satellite was conditioned by the short duration of the project, which from acceptance to launching day was only 11 months. The launching vehicle to be used was a US Sparta three-stage rocket, one of a series that had been fired at Woomera for research purposes. The satellite was so designed that both the third stage of the rocket and the instrumented nose cone would go into orbit together without separation. In all, three satellite cones were made. The first as a model for the structural design, the second as a space model to check the internal arrangement and accessibility of components, and the third as the actual flight model. The structure was of strong ring and stringer construction, braced by an aluminium outer skin 48 thousandths of an inch thick. Loads of up to 1,000 pounds were applied progressively at 7 points on the structure to simulate the forces arising from acceleration. Over 70 strain gauges were used to measure the deformations produced. Drop tests were done to simulate the effects of acceleration with short rise time, such as might occur during launch or the firing of the upper stages. The design allowed for acceleration up to 40 G. Vibration tests were carried out on the flight cone. The cone was subjected to a spectrum of vibrations which would encompass all frequencies likely to be met with in flight. Measurements of accelerations in longitudinal and transverse directions were made on this centrifuge. The structural cone that was used included components and sub-assemblies. Extensive modifications to the WRE centrifuge and careful balancing adjustments were made prior to these tests. In these torsional impact tests, the shock forces achieved during the sudden braking simulated those that would be caused when the spin-up motors were fired. Here, tests were being made of the mechanism which ejected the protective plate covering the instruments that were exposed to solar radiations during flight. The plate was spun off by the centrifugal force arising from the rotation of the cone. Experiments carried in the satellite were designed to extend the range of data obtained previously from research programs in which sounding rockets were used to probe the upper atmosphere. The satellite experiments were designed to use ionization chambers and detectors to measure solar radiation in X-ray and ultraviolet wavebands. Such information contributes to knowledge of solar-terrestrial relationships, and in particular, the way in which solar radiations influence the composition and structure of the upper atmosphere. An energy dissipator, consisting of a closed loop of aluminium tubing filled with silicone oil, was fitted to change the axis of satellite spin quickly so that the sideways and forward-facing experiments would be exposed to the sun as the satellite spun. A number of precautions were taken to protect the cone and its contents from extremes of heat and cold. As a protection against aerodynamic heating during launch, 1/8-inch sheet cork painted black was fixed to the surface of the cone where protrusions occurred. The remaining surface was also painted black so that a suitable balance would be achieved in orbit between heat absorption and emission. Internally, the cone was painted white to promote uniformity of temperature, and a shroud of aluminium foil and glass cloth was placed over the third stage motor to shield the interior of the cone and instrumentation from its heat. To further simulate space conditions, the flight cone was subjected to hot and cold soak in a vacuum chamber. Here, under atmospheric pressure of 5 millimeters of mercury, the temperature was varied between minus 15 and 50 degrees centigrade in a 7-hour cycle for a number of days. Final preparation involved the checking of weight and moments of inertia about the various axes. These are fundamental properties which determine the orbit and attitude of satellite. The total mass placed in orbit was 186 pounds. The satellite cone was now complete. Before sending it to the firing range at Woomera, it was taken to Canberra to the Auroral Valley Tracking Station. Here, the cone was placed in a screened room and careful checks were made which demonstrated its compatibility with the ground receiving equipment. The Auroral Valley Station is one of the U.S. global network of such stations that would track the satellite when in orbit. With the arrival of the RESAT cone from Canberra, final checks and assembly were begun. The cone was checked out and explosive components were fitted. The sensors received a final check using a hydrogen light source rich in ultraviolet. The space between was flushed with nitrogen gas to prevent oxygen absorption. The radar transponder received a final check. Finally, the covers were fitted, the nose cone was screwed down, and RESAT was ready. It was then taken to the launching area for mating to the rocket. Here, with great care, to the relief of some and the confusion of the skeptics, it mated up perfectly, and the whole assembly was ready for launching. Erection was completed, the umbilical cord was attached. Through this cord, monitoring functions were maintained, and power was supplied to ignite the rocket engines. In the nearby control van, missile functions were checked. When all was well, the countdown began. The optical tracker had a hazy view of the launcher scene due to the high ground temperature. As the countdown proceeds, the heater cooler drop tank is shed. Light up. Lift off. passes through an atmospheric layer of high humidity. The line of fire is 6 degrees east of north. The tracking camera loses the missile, finds it again. The first stage is all burnt. It separates and falls away into the Simpson Desert. The second stage was destined to fall into the Gulf of Carpentaria to the north of Australia, but heating on re-entry may have burnt it up. Its fall was not observed. Final injection into orbit occurred at latitude 27 degrees 30 minutes south.
And that happened 56 years ago today. One of the designers of RESAT was Carl Zalkowski, and he worked for the Weapons Research Establishment in Adelaide. The folks at what's now called the DST Group caught up with him and gathered his memories. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I was a design draftsman at the time. 50 years ago, Peter Pemberton came along. He was the engineer on the job. And he said, we've got a very quick rush job to do. And he got a few of the leading draftsmen together. And he said, what, we've had an offer from the Americans on the Redstone rocket to use the last Redstone rocket, which they used for re-entry trials, to put up a satellite. So what we needed to do is we were firstly given the interface with the Redstone rocket, and then the university and a few other institutions designed some experiments that they wanted to put up into satellite. So my job was to draw up a structure which interfaced with the Redstone rocket and also housed all the experimental gear inside, with windows to the outside. And so it was a matter of preparing a structure frame, a skin, and mountings inside for all the instruments. One Saturday afternoon, Peter came in and he said, right, boys, hop in the car. And we all drove into North Terrace. And at the time, there was a Gemini capsule on display in North Terrace. And Peter Pemberton arranged with the city council or whoever to actually close it for an hour to allow us to go inside and see what we could learn, how things were done. Well, firstly, we learned that things in there were fairly rough. Obviously, it was done in a hurry, and obviously it was only a one-off unit. And so we had a good look around, and we came back and we learned a few things and carried on drawing. The university came along and they gave us drawings of their equipment, their test, and it was just a matter of mounting it, and it had to undergo some rigorous vibration to withstand the vibrations of the launch. I went up to Woomera to see the launch, and with minus about 10 minutes or 10 seconds or something, it was halted, and we didn't know when it was going to go again. So I came back, and it went off the next day. Thinking back, I wouldn't have thought it was so long ago. And it's amazing how much I've forgotten about it. It's sort of coming back to me now. But it was a time when we liked the job and we were looking forward to coming to work in the morning, having thought at night about how we'd do things. And I couldn't get to work quick enough to put it on paper. And it was a very interesting and stimulating time. And we all worked very closely together. And well, I guess we're proud that we got a satellite up. And I believe it all worked well. And the university and the other institutions that instruments in there got the data that they were looking for.
That's quite an achievement.
Yes.
And it was 6 years ago last week that Australia had another military-built satellite, and it was called Buccaneer.
It's just hugely exciting for our small satellite experimentation team that on the 18th of November in 2017, we launched the first satellite that DST and its forerunners have launched since 1967. So a gap, like 50 years ago. So that was just a huge milestone and very, very exciting for our team. And I think a great step forward for DST and for defence as well. Of course, one of the things that we had to do as part of the Buccaneer program was to demonstrate to NASA that our little miniature satellite was suitable for launch on the Delta II. We were able to demonstrate full compliance with all of their requirements.
T-minus 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, engine start, 1. And liftoff of Delta II and NOAA's Joint Polar Satellite System 1.
The current on-orbit Buccaneer is like a pathfinder for a future launch of a second Buccaneer. So what we'll do is we'll use the digital high-frequency receiver with its associated 3-meter-long antenna in a cross shape. We'll use that to capture signals transmitted by Dawn, a ground-based radar system that is crucial to our defence of Australia. So the satellite will be way out in the far field of the Dawn transmitting arrays. So we'll capture those signals, we'll digitise them on the satellite, and then those digitised signals, we'll transmit them down to our ground segment. And so the equation is that we've got a very, very, very inexpensive little CubeSat. Contributing to the refinement in the performance of a ground-based radar system that is worth billions of dollars. Our partners at the University of New South Wales, Canberra, put a little low-resolution camera in the CubeSat, and so we've been able to use that to take photos of the deployed high-frequency antenna, and over a period of a couple of months now, we've seen that the high-frequency antenna is always in the right position in the camera field of view. So not only has it deployed successfully, but it's maintained its cross-shaped structure, and it hasn't collapsed. So that's been a very successful demonstration for us.
You can't learn or gain a really deep understanding of satellite operations from reading a book. I mean, unless we've got people doing it, we're not going to get where we need to be, because these are going to be the folks that we turn to for advice in the future. And Defence needs to make sure that its experts haven't just learned about it, they've done it, they really, truly, deeply get it and can give us what we need as we move forward.
It's very crucial to us to have missions that have real capability or demonstrate real capability for Australian defence. And so currently we are thinking about, you know, what once we've done Buccaneer and we've achieved that mission for Dawn, what other missions are out there that we could undertake to that, you know, will have real benefit for Australian defence?
And that was David Lingard from the DST and Stephen Henry from the Air Force talking about the satellite launched 6 years ago, last week.